Hello, listeners of News 100 Years Ago. We're trying to increase our listenership and get some reviews on how we can improve. Please let us know what we can do to make things better. Or maybe even a story or subject that you'd like to hear more about, and tell your friends about News 100 Years Ago. Thank you for listening. News from 100 years ago, 1920. If you have no bathroom, don't hunt for another house, but buy a Mosley folding bathtub, portable, self-heating, elegant designs, adapted for both city and country use. Send 2 cents for illustrated catalog showing 18 styles of tubs, improved water heaters, etc. Mosley Folding Bathtub Company, 161 L South Canal Street, Chicago, Illinois. Dear Annie Laurie, I'm a boy of 17 and would like to know how to show my love for a girl who is a year younger than myself. She seems to like me, but she's paying too much attention to other boys, so please advise me on this subject. Signed, Red. Dear Red, a girl a year younger than yourself is too young to think of any young men other than friends, my dear boy. If you are wise, you will be a good friend to her and will not talk of love until you're both older. Dear Annie Laurie, I've been reading your advice to girls, and I think it's wonderful. I've been going with a young man, and he does not want me to go with any other young man. He promised to do likewise, but he did not keep his promise. He went to see another girl. Now he wishes to make up and go with me again. What would you do? Signed, Marion. Dear Marion, it depends on how much you are willing to trust the young man, and upon how much you care for him, and upon what pledges you are going to exact from each other when you do make up and be friends again. Unless you are definitely engaged, both should be quite free, you know. Dear Annie Laurie, I'm a girl of 18 years and in love with a young man 2 years my senior, and I know he likes me very much, and I love him dearly, but he is from one of the wealthiest families, and I know they would object to him paying me attention. He takes me out in his boyfriend's automobile, and my mother thinks he is very nice. Do you think it's wrong for me to go with him against his parents' wishes? Do you think it's wrong to let him kiss me? He has been going with me quite a bit for 3.5 years when I went to high school, and he went to the academy. Signed, Teddy. Dear Teddy, talk this over with your mother, my dear. I hesitate to advise you on such an important matter when your mother has already shown her interest and her willingness to help you. You shouldn't permit him to show any evidences of affection, however. You are not engaged, you know. Dear Annie Laurie, I'm a bride of a few weeks, and my husband has only spent 2 evenings home with me since we were married. He claims he has so much to do at the office. Do you think I should be satisfied with this reason? Or do you think it's only an excuse to seek pleasure elsewhere? We are in a small town, and I find it very lonesome. Please tell me what I should do. Signed, Desperate. Dear Desperate, your letter shows that you are a capable little businesswoman and that you can use a typewriter. Therefore, you're probably able to understand that business often does keep men at work in the evening. Maybe you can help him so that he will have more time. Have you tried being helpful? I should not want to think he was just making excuses. Probably he is trying to make more money for you as well as for himself. Have a frank talk with him. Ask him to let you help. And then, if you want to be happy, learn to trust your husband and to believe what he tells you. Dear Annie Laurie, I'm appealing to your assistance. I'm a high school girl of 16, and I'm acquainted with a young boy of 17. He's gone away and he wishes me to write him. He has already written 2 letters. As I have been acquainted with him 2 months, I would like to know if it is proper for me to write him. Would it be proper to accept gifts from a boy? Is it correct for a girl to wear a ring belonging to a boy? Signed, Curly Locks. Dear Curly Locks, if the letters are merely friendly notes, I can see no harm in them. Of course, they must not be sentimental. I would not accept gifts if I were you. It always places one under obligations, you know. Wearing jewelry belonging to another is apt to cause a lot of trouble and embarrassment if the trinket should be lost. Ironing made easy. Easy, yes. You'll actually enjoy ironing on the Simplex. Quick, the Simplex completes an average ironing in an hour. Economical, 3 cents is the cost of the weekly ironing. Saves $100 a year in fuel, help, laundry bills. Labor saving. Saves strength and protects health. Simplex Ironer. The best ironer. Irons everything except skirts and shirt waists. Send for a free illustrated book. Clean Linen in Abundance. American Ironing Machine Company, 513 North Michigan Avenue, Chicago. It's a mark of intelligent housekeeping to possess a Simplex. Health comes to Lad through advertising. Despairing parents as last resort choose remedy heard through this newspaper. Boy is now well and robust. It would hardly occur to you that a miracle could be worked through advertising. One that saved to doting parents the life of their only son? Strange as it may seem, that is just exactly what has been accomplished in a specific instance right here in Altoona. We have all heard volumes about the value of advertising, and that the great result achieved by it should save life almost passes our belief. However, here are the facts in the case. Paul McCartney, son of Mr. and Mrs. Sheldon McCartney, residing at 2923 Walnut Avenue, and who on October 10th last celebrated the 14th anniversary of his birthday, took sick July 1920. His illness rapidly assuming such a critical aspect that his life was despaired of. The parents, in their frantic efforts to save his life, called in different medical practitioners, and at different times had him admitted to both city hospitals. The malady was diagnosed by the physicians as tuberculosis, and it was suggested that the parents keep the boy out of doors, day and night, and feed him entirely on a milk and egg diet. In compliance, the parents had an army cot placed on the back porch, had it properly screened, and there the sufferer, reduced to a mere skeleton, lay day and night, his life ebbing. From August until October, the patient was unable to take nourishment of any kind, except the occasional insignificant quantities sufficient to sustain the waning life. The stomach would not retain the food. Finally, the attending physician told the despairing mother that he could do nothing more. Fortunately, Mrs. McCartney's father, A.T. Rigg, brought to his daughter a copy of the Altoona Times containing an advertisement of Milk's Emulsion, Nature's Remedy, prepared and sold by the Milk's Emulsion Company in Terre Haute, Indiana, and advised her to try it as a last resort. The effect was marvelous. In an interview granted to the Times Tribune reporter last evening, pursuant to an inquiry from the Milk's Emulsion Company, to whom Mrs. McCartney had sent a letter of appreciation, she had said that in 3 days after taking the remedy, her boy was able to walk with her aid. After taking 10 bottles, he was wholly restored to health. In substantiation of her story, this reporter was shown a snapshot of Paul after he had used the emulsion 3 days. He was a mere bag of bones, as the saying goes. A pitiful figure with skin drawn taut over the bones. Then the contrast, the mother called in her son who was engaged in strenuous play on the street. And in came a lad, vibrant with health and cheeks glowing like rose. All this in spite of the ultimatum by a physician. Mrs. McCartney sent her letter to the company in the hope that other mothers could learn of the remedy, what it did for her son, and perhaps receive from it the same invaluable boon. She called the attention of the reporter to a bottle of the emulsion, which ever has a place of honor on the buffet, and to which she says, "Recourse is had every time any member of the family complains of not feeling well. Paul is attending school regularly, being enrolled at the Curtin Building. Mrs. McCartney is a well-known machinist in the Juntea shops." I have been using mentholaxine for a number of years. The foregoing quotation is similar to scores of others, written by the most intelligent people throughout America. Mrs. H.R. Bartlett, Hopedale, Massachusetts, writes in part, "I've been using mentholaxine for a number of years and find it the most effective cough remedy on the market. Have recommended to a number of others, etc." Ask yourself this question. Would anyone use mentholaxine for a number of years if it was not the most effective cough medicine on the market? For colds, coughs, bronchitis, hoarseness, whooping cough, catarrh of the throat, difficult breathing, and even asthma. It is quite the most efficient and cheapest good medicine anyone can find. It is pure and concentrated in 2.5-ounce bottles, with directions for making a full pint of cough syrup easily at home. It affects a savings of from $2 to $3, which is worthwhile of these days of high costs. Every bottle is guaranteed satisfactory by the makers. Your druggist has it, or he can get it from his jobber. Mentholaxine. And now, wire flashes. From the Tulsa Tribune in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Resignation of E.C. Morse, Director of Sales for the War Department, was announced recently to take effect December 31st or earlier. He will be succeeded by Lieutenant Colonel E.S. Hartshorn of the General Staff. No previous presidential election, as far as can be recalled in Washington, has been watched so closely and with so much interest by members of the diplomatic corps. The representatives of the various foreign governments have been keeping in close touch with the developments of the campaign. Grover Cleveland Bergdahl, who escaped from his guards in Philadelphia last May after having begun a 5-year sentence for desertion from the United States Army, has not been arrested in Koblenz or elsewhere in Germany, as reported American military authorities declare. A substantial decline in the wholesale price of beef material decreases wholesale prices of pork products, and a strong export demand for lard and dry salt meats were three features of the meat situation in October, says a statement issued by the Packers Institute of Washington. Secretary Colby described the discussions on California alien land law with the Japanese ambassador as being of the most friendly and candid nature, and also said the relation of certain treaty provisions to the proposed California measure would doubtless prove an element in the state's decision. Estimates placed on the soft coal output for the week ended October 23rd at 21,146,000 net tons, while reports for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of last week showed increases over the corresponding days of the previous week. The year's production, however, is about 8,500,000 tons less than that of 1917. The 8,157 national banks of the country reported a gross revenue of $1,109 million, or 24% of their capital, for the fiscal year ended last June 30th, said in a statement issued by John Skelton Williams, Comptroller of the Currency. This, Mr. Williams said, is a new high record. Ellie Tucker, commercial airplane pilot of Riverside, California, was killed at Los Angeles, California, when his airplane fell 200 feet. M.M. Langley of Los Angeles, a passenger, suffered a fractured skull. And now, news oddities. B.J. Cochran, held at Aspermont, Texas, for investigation in connection with an alleged life insurance fraud, has added a new twist to his empty grave story. He claims now that Mexicans, wishing to collect a $10,000 reward offered for his capture by the Mexican government, drugged him, buried him alive, dug him up, and took him to Mexico, where they held him several months. One sweet potato, 12.5 pounds, such is the record set by W.I. Jackson, farmer residing in Garden City, near Redford. He was displaying the spud in Tulsa last night. A citizen of Oklahoma City would have a change in practice of medicine in the state. He would have a corporation commission issue licenses to physicians, would require all prescriptions to be written in English, and all major operations to be conducted before the eyes of a witness. An initiative petition to this effect was filed with the Secretary of State yesterday. Susan D. Scott is one of the actresses in Up in Mabel's Room. Miss Scott is a cousin of Mrs. Frank Seaman, city auditor. Miami, Oklahoma, Elsie Smith has charmed and eloped with the daughter of B.F. Pinser, High Sheriff of Yale, Oklahoma, but he didn't have a chance. He reported detained in Kansas City, and the High Sheriff is now en route for his wandering progeny. P.W. Archer and W.I. Mitchell arrested last night when officers raided their wholesale drug house, 5 East Haskell Avenue, confiscating a large quantity of Jake, were held not guilty of violating prohibitory law when given a preliminary hearing yesterday before C.L. Yancey, United States Commissioner. Ponca City, Earl Todd, residing in west of Tonkawa, Oklahoma, was caught in a farm tractor last week so seriously that he could not complete his wheat crop. Neighbors yesterday finished the task for him. Charles H. Rambo, 75, of Hevener, Oklahoma, veteran of the Civil War, was en route to Atlanta and war again. He was found at the Union Station wandering. An old bullet wound in his head caused a lapse of memory. Want a job as a rural mail carrier at Bixby, Broken Arrow, or Tulsa? The United States Civil Service Commission will hold an examination for those positions here November 13th at the post office. In a battle with police officers near Denver, Colorado late yesterday, George H. Brown and Charles Setz of Pueblo were killed and Frank Green of this place was seriously injured. The men are suspected of being members of a bandit gang. Prizes are to be given at the Elks Masquerade Ball tonight. One award will be for the most attractive male attire and the other for the most stunning female garb. Harvey Minstrels coming. Boasting that minstrels are not all alike, the Harvey Greater Minstrels propose to give Tulsa a new presentation in the blackface comedy that will illustrate the difference at Convention Hall Monday. It is a Negro performing troupe which claims to have attained considerable success with their show on the road. A street parade will be given the morning, presenting the usual flashy effect of a minstrel procession accompanied by a brass band. The feature in the parade will be Slim Jim Austin performing upon a slide trombone. And for our newspaper soap opera, Revelations of a Wife by Adele Garrison.
And now, episode 4.
Our taxi drew into the long line of motor cars before the theater and slowly crept up to the door. Dickie jumped out, raised his umbrella, and guided me into the lobby. It was filled with men and women, some in elaborate evening dress, others in street garb. Some were going to their seats, others were gossiping with each other. Still others appeared to be waiting for friends. The most conspicuous of all the women leaned against the wall and gazed at the others through a lorgnette, which she handled as if she had not long been accustomed to its use. Her gown, a daringly cut one, was of scarlet chiffon over silk, and her gold brocaded cape was half slipping from her shoulders. Her hair was frankly dyed, and she was rouged outrageously. I gazed at her fascinated. She typified to me everything that was disagreeable. I've always disliked even being in the neighborhood of her vulgar kind. What was my horror, then, to see her deliberately smiling at me? Then coming toward us with a hand outstretched, I realizing the truth even before she spoke, it was not I at whom she was smiling, but Dickie. She was Dickie's friend. "Why, bless my soul, if it isn't the Dickie bird!" she cried so loudly that everyone turned to look at us. "I suppose this is the bride you've been hiding away so jealously." She looked at me up and down, as if I were on exhibition. "Pretty good taste, Dickie, but I don't imagine that your old friends will see much of you from now on." "That's where you're wrong, Lil," returned Dickie easily. "We're going to have you all up some night soon." "See that you do," she returned, tweaking his ear as we passed on to our seats. I had not spoken during the conversation. I had shaken the hand of the woman and smiled at her. But over and over again in my brain, this question was revolving. Who is this unpleasant woman who calls my husband Dickie Bird? And who is called Lil by him? But I loved the very air of the theater. So as Dickie and I sank into the old-fashioned brocaded seats, I resolutely put away from my mind all disturbing thoughts of the woman in the lobby who appeared on such good terms with my husband, and prepared to enjoy every moment of the evening. "Well done, Madge," Dickie whispered mischievously, as after we had been seated, I let my cloak drop from my shoulders without arising. "You wriggled that off in the most approved manner." "I ought to," I whispered back. I watched other women with envious attention during all the lean years, and I were tailor-made to mill into meeting. Dickie squeezed my hand under the cover of the cloak. "No more lean years for my girl, if I can help it," he murmured earnestly. "I'm not saying these actors nowadays are not all right, but they don't hold a candle to older ones. Take Mary Anderson now, there was an actress worthy of the name. I remember when I saw her. Not only Dickie and I, but everyone near us turned in amazement at the sound of the querulous old voice telling of other days. By George, Madge, Dickie drew in a deep breath. Look at that. Those people are just what I want for that cover I've been muddling over so long. The only trouble is if I draw them just as they are, everybody will say that I evolved them from my imagination, that they never existed in the flesh. I agreed with Dickie as I looked at the owner of the voice, an old man, thin, spare, with clear blue eyes and a long, carefully trimmed white beard, which waggled as he talked. The two women with him resembled him so closely that I knew that they must be his daughters, were pleasant-faced, intellectual-looking women, but bore in every line of their dowdy costumes, every stiff, awkward movement of their bodies, the hallmark of middle-aged women from the small country town on her first visit to the large city. Scared to death, both of them, for fear they don't do the correct thing, commented Dickie. I say, Madge, would you mind changing seats with me for the evening? I've just got to get a sketch of them. They're not the kind who will pose, and if I try from the aisle seat, they'll catch on. But behind your broad shoulders, he burlesqued with a grin, I shall be safe. But Dick, I protested, horrified, you wouldn't sketch them without their knowledge, would you? Just watch me, Dick replied curtly. Don't get alarmed. I'm not going to produce a drawing board and do a studio stunt, but I must get some impressions of those faces. But where is your paper and pencil? My voice still held a note of protest, which Dickie ignored. I'm never without a pencil, he replied, producing a disreputable-looking stub of one. And the margin of the program will do nicely. Save it, and after I'm dead and famous, you can trade it for bread. Now, fair lady, if you will just change seats. His eyes were dancing as he rose and stood looking down at me, waiting for me to rise. I read merriment, tenderness, and the enthusiasm for his work, which will carry Dickie far, I feel. I rose without a word and took the aisle seat, and Dickie arranged my cape around me so that he could sketch unobserved behind it. Go ahead, talk to me. Talk to me just as if I weren't doing this, Dickie commanded. This won't take all my time. Let's look around and see the first nighters.
And that was episode 4, Revelations of a Wife. Thank you for listening. And that was news from 100 years ago. You can hear more of our podcasts on all listening outlets. Thank you for listening.